the William and Mary Entrepreneurship Podcast, your source for innovation across the Mid-Atlantic region and beyond.
William and Mary Entrepreneurship Podcast, brought to you by the Alan B. Miller Entrepreneurship Center at the Mason School of Business. This is episode 3. I'm Corey Everett.
And I'm Adam Reel. In this podcast, we are studying abroad in Southeast Asia, where we got the opportunity to meet two entrepreneurs, Mike and Carrie. Both have MBAs from top-tier USB schools and relocated to Ho Chi Minh City in the early 90s as the country started to open up both economically and socially. We don't talk much in this podcast, but that's only because Mike and Carrie do such a great job answering our questions.
So they are both experienced entrepreneurs in Southeast Asia. Having lived in the country for about 20 years, they're both fluent in the language and truly understand doing business in Vietnam.
The interview took place in the lobby of the Bong Sin Hotel. So you won't hear New York City bar patrons like the previous episode, but you'll hear traffic and Vietnamese pop music in the background.
So in the 1980s, Vietnam was a completely state-run economy, but began to open up to private businesses under the Doi Moi policy. During the 90s, a private sector economy had developed, and the country resumed diplomatic relations with the U.S.
And this is where Mike and Carrie come in. Well, thank you, gentlemen, both for joining us. It's going to be a great session in the William & Mary Business School podcast. If you would, just go ahead and introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about how you came to Ho Chi Minh City.
All right. My name is Carrie Zessiger, and I first came to Vietnam about 20-plus years ago. And I started out just came here as a tourist. I was backpacking through and just kind of wandered in, basically, and found it was a pretty interesting story developing here. It was an early stage emerging market, obviously, and things were just starting to open up. And so I kind of got the sense that, maybe this would be an interesting place to spend a little time. Certainly had no idea I'd be here 20 years later, but it proved to be quite an interesting ride. Obviously the economy has changed tremendously in those 20 years. The local residents have gone from riding bicycles to riding scooters and motorbikes, and now you'll see, fancy cars and Toyotas everywhere. So obviously the standard of living has come up tremendously, and with that the whole economy and the potential of the market here.
And my name is Mike Doyle. I moved here 20 years ago. I set up an office in Hanoi for a consulting company that I represented, and then worked for a number of Fortune 500 companies in Vietnam for the first couple of years. And I, unlike Carrie, I plan to move here permanently and grow with the market. And at that time, Vietnam was very poor and didn't have all the nuances that we have today in the market. And so it was something that we could grow into, start companies, do business, and learn the market while the country is still opening up. And it really took about 10 years for the country to open up. About 2000, 2002, we started to see a much better prognosis for business. And over the last 10 years, the market has been growing quite fast for us.
On our panel discussion earlier, you'd mentioned that there's been a real growth in the middle class here in Vietnam. And it really seems to tie into the entrepreneurial ideas that you've been involved with here in Vietnam. Maybe you can share some of the industries and ventures that you have started over the last 15 or 20 years.
Well, I've been in fashion business and sporting equipment, in sports training like scuba diving, and in recreational fashion like surf fashion. And in the beginning, when Carrie and I both came to Vietnam, there was either a very wealthy class and essentially a low to middle market. There really wasn't a middle class per se. And in the last 10 years, we've seen a fairly fast growth. And I would count several of our staff now, our senior managers in the Vietnamese middle class. And they have a desire, like every other middle class, to buy new products, whether they're electronics or fashion or cars or bikes. They have the same needs of other markets. And so we've catered to these demands by bringing in specific products. In my case, it's been fashion or specialty food items like Italian coffee, ice cream, or wine. And in Carrie's business, it's been more fashion accessories and fashion. And so as the middle class continues to grow, my company is looking for more and more opportunities to supply them with products that they're looking for. And so as the year goes on, as each year goes on, we're looking for better quality, premium products that the market will start looking for.
Right. Just to jump on the end there. I think if you look at the last 10, 15 years, which has been the real kind of growth spurt that we've seen here in Vietnam, I mean, the GDP has been growing about 6-7, kind of maxed out around 8%. But during that same time frame, the retail market every year has been growing 25-30+%. So that's sort of the core that I think both of us are targeting.
And I think both of our companies have been growing at that same rate. But you have to understand that the market is coming from a low base, and our businesses came from scratch. So to get 20, 30, 40% growth rates, it's very good for us, but it's also coming off of a low base. To maintain that in the next 10 years probably won't be practical, but we should be able to get pretty good growth rates for the business.
Great. Well, doing business in the States is obviously very, very different than doing business in Southeast Asia, and in particular Vietnam. Could you both give us some keys to starting and growing businesses here in the country?
Well, you have to do your market research. And that's one thing we see a lot of people coming in using their experiences in a Western market and assuming that the same thing will happen in Vietnam, and it's not true. They need to understand the market themselves, not through a local person, but on the ground for many weeks, try to understand the market. And the biggest failure we see is people coming into the market from Western countries not understanding the pricing. They assume that a $4 something can sell, when in fact maybe that's double or triple or quadruple the price of a competitor's product. And so it's very important to not only understand what's going on in the market, who the buyers are, but to understand the pricing dynamics.
I think there's a whole lot of challenges to a startup business here, which some of which we touched on earlier, but I think management is definitely a key one. It's very hard to hire qualified, experienced managers. And so that's one of the limits to growth and one of the things that's holding back a lot of business here, I think, is the HR problem and the management problem of how do you hire good managers and good staff. Other things we mentioned, like the legal environment is not developed, so you've got a lot of risks around regulation and legal issues and contracts and things like that that you might not have in a developed market, so you need to be aware of that. So the potential is there, the opportunities are there, but there's a lot of risks that you need to really think about before you jump in.
Yeah. And then there's another issue that a lot of the, unfortunately, the local staff in up to recently a closed economy hasn't really traveled enough to understand brand values. So if you try to teach them brand values of a famous U.S. brand, for example, it's very difficult unless they live the lifestyle like we have when we grew up. So this is something that we continue to spend a lot of training time on to try to come up with artificial ways to teach brand values when, in fact, our staff never grew up with those brands or that lifestyle.
And one of our previous meetings today with Russian and VC law firm, they really brought out some of the challenges that Western companies have coming into the Vietnamese market, specifically around the Decree 46 and the challenges of hiring Western staff. How have you guys been able to really succeed in this environment here in Vietnam within the regulatory framework that you're presented with?
Well, I think I can answer that for me and probably for Mike as well. I mean, for the most part, we don't hire foreign staff. I mean, basically, you know, we hire the best local staff we can find. Often we hire very young staff and we train them up. Because like I said, I mean, there's not a lot of kind of ready-made managers and people out there. So we found the best approach for us usually is to develop our own talent in-house. So we've got a lot of people who started out as just, you know, salespeople that, you know, have been with us for many years, and we've trained them up, and now they're managing a store or a brand or a whole branch of the business.
Yeah, and are these typically people that have been Western educated, or is it a lot of locally trained and developed staff?
For us, it's all local.
Great.
Yeah, you can't afford to do a startup in this market and hire foreign talent. You just wouldn't have the. You are now then looking at a U.S. cost structure, and you just can't financially keep the business going at those rates.
Mike, you'd mentioned that you've tried a startup before, and it's been a very low cost to bring on the initial staff. Maybe could you share with us some of the opportunities that you've had previously, especially before many Western firms came in?
Yeah, we took in several foreign brands, such as leading ice cream brands or coffee brands or tea or mineral water, all imported into this country, or fashion brands. And, you know, it's not easy because there's no market for these brands. This market, when we came here, was all centered around locally produced product. So they're really... in the Vietnamese view, no demand for a foreign or imported product, and no valuation or understanding of why there's such a gap in pricing. So that took years to train customers and teach customers about brand values and quality and the benefits that they get out of using international brands.
Well, that's you shared some comments with us earlier about entrepreneurship and teaching entrepreneurship in higher education. I was just hoping you could share those thoughts with us.
Well, I think, you know, in my view, it's hard to teach entrepreneurship. It's something, you know, that you can teach certain skills, obviously, that you can get in a business school kind of MBA program, and you can teach certain tools. But I think, you know, the heart of the matter is you just got to go and do it. And, you know, you learn by doing, you learn by making mistakes, trial and error, and, you know, hopefully every failure teaches you something that you can, you know, overcome and, you know, do better the next time.
I think one of the issues is that the startup cost in Vietnam for the many years was quite low. So we could experiment with brands or businesses, and really if they didn't work, we didn't lose a lot of money. I mean, Carrie and I both had a software business at one time where we probably invested $10,000 or $15,000 each, and it didn't work out because of the market shift. But, you know, that's not a very big loss for the upside of trying to start a business. Today, it's different. Rent, salaries, all the operating costs are starting to get on par with other Asian countries. And so I think it is more difficult to start up businesses. But in the first 10 to 15 years of being here, it was quite easy to come up with a new idea, grab a brand, or grab an idea and start it up. And if it worked, great. And if it didn't work, you didn't lose a lot.
Although I think, you know, I think there's still a lot of potential for entrepreneurship here. For example, I have a friend who's a serial entrepreneur. He's done a whole bunch of software companies and game companies and things like this. And now he's launching another startup. And, you know, I think he told me he's putting in maybe, you know, $200,000 to $250,000, but he can hire, you know, 10, 20 software programmers and get them coding away and start churning out some apps and some software that, you know, hopefully will turn into a real, you know, a real business.
Yeah, I guess that's one issue in Vietnam. The entrepreneurial opportunities are still here, whereas in the Western world, you know, it's quite expensive. You'd have to raise $1 million, $2 million, $5 million to start your own business. Here you could raise a couple $100,000 through friends and family and be on the road to operating a business.
And maybe real quick, just to wrap up, we mentioned in the panel discussion earlier that funding for entrepreneurial ventures here in Vietnam, it's really not done through mezzanine funds. It's really starting with friends and family for small and medium-sized enterprises. There is some private equity money coming into the company, particularly around real estate, but the smaller deals, it's really through friends and family effort, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. Most of the funds that are operating in Vietnam are looking for big deals, and they're looking for minimum $20 million investments, and so you really can't do that at the startup level.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. And also, I mean, there is a very small venture community here, and probably an even smaller angel community, but it's tiny. So, I mean, really, you've got to bring your own funding or do friends and family if you want to get started. And maybe somewhere down the road, you can look at some of those venture funds for an exit or a partial exit, but it's not going to be early stage.
Well, thank you both so much for the conversation. It's great to speak with both of you.
Yeah, we really appreciate the time, and can't say enough about the city. It's really been great to be here.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So thanks for joining us on today's podcast. If you know any potential candidates for the William & Mary MBA program and live in the D.C. or New York area, we have MBA Tour admission events taking place on Thursday, February 2nd in D.C., and Saturday, February 4th in New York City. We really like to get some feedback from everyone that listens to this podcast. We might do a Q&A episode, and we really want to get some more ideas out there. Send us an email at bizpodcast@mason.wm.edu or hit us on Twitter at @WMBIZpodcast. And once again, we're up on iTunes. Just type in WNM in the search box and be sure to tell your friends. Thanks for listening.